listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 91, Kung Fu Panda 2, The Kaboom of Doom. This episode is brought to you by the Roto Stickers! Every limited edition Roto t-shirt comes with the equally limited Roto stickers. Put them on your computer, binder, or anywhere you want and show off your Roto pride. Head on over to rotoscopers.com/store to get your Roto t-shirt and Roto stickers today.
Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. I am your host, Kung Fu Master of the Flinging Monkey Style, Mason Smith, and I am here with Mistress of Jumping Otter Style, Morgan Stradling.
Boop, 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 boop. Is that my otter noise?
Yes, that is exactly what an otter sounds like. And Chelsea Robson, the only surviving practitioner of flailing antler style kung fu. Chelsea Robson.
No!
Watch those antlers. So we are the Rotoscopers, and this is the Animation Addicts Podcast. It's a podcast where we talk about how much we love animation, and we review our favorite animated films. We try to go over all the nitty-gritty, fan-love-saturated details of the movies that we review. And so if you love animation and you love talking about not just the fun parts and the quotes, but the technical and the music and the marketing, everything, then you'll feel right at home with us.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
You guys, did you see that? I just was like, what? Hi!
Yeah. Oh, I have received a message.
From the universe?
From the messenger.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Our greatest masters are disappearing. I fear this is the work of Lord Shen, who has unleashed a new kind of threat on our world. This could mean the end of Kung Fu.
But I just got Kung Fu!
And now, you must save it. Take the five. It is time for the next phase of your journey.
My fist hungers for justice.
That was my fist.
We need to get to that tower without being spotted by those wolves.
Huh?
Got it. Stealth mode.
I hate you sneaking around.
Hey.
Huh? Oh,
I like it.
How can Kung Fu stop something that stops Kung Fu?
Here we go! Silver Dragon Warrior. When you follow the noble path, anything is possible.
I'm freaking in.
Where are the signs?
What signs?
Ah! So many signs!
My old enemy stares.
It's twice the kung fu.
Skadoosh.
It even has a little skadoosh in it.
Just one. But you can't just overuse those skadooshes. It's very, very particular when you use it for effect. It's usually a very superpowered move. Great job, Poe. Okay, so some general information about this film. The studio, it did not change studios in between 2008 and 2011. It's still DreamWorks. Huh. The director is Jennifer Yu Nelson. And she is actually a sole female director on this film, which is huge because she has one of the top grossing female directed films ever. It went on to gross $665.7 million worldwide on a budget of $150 million. So it made more than the first film, which is why they've greenlit a third.
Girl power.
Yeah. So this film actually went through quite a few name changes. It wasn't originally called Kung Fu Panda 2. It originally was called, it had the subtitle Pandemonium, but then it was changed to Kung Fu Panda 2, The Kaboom of Doom. Yeah,
it was my personal favorite.
It's great, but they just dropped it and simply went with Kung Fu Panda 2.
Yeah,
so
it's too juvenile for what the film deals with.
Thoughts about this film? Any recollection seeing it in theaters?
Man, I saw it in theaters and I was really excited. I didn't see it in 3D. This one was rendered in stereoscopic 3D, and I remember feeling like it was an improvement on the first one. And I think the thing that I remembered most was the color in the film. And I suppose we'll talk about that later. But my first impressions when I first saw it in theaters was very striking use of color in the film.
Yeah, I was actually living in Brazil at the time that this came out. So this was the very first time that I saw this movie. So these were my initial thoughts. Like the Kung Fu Panda series was never one that I really like gravitated to. I had seen the first one maybe once, but I don't even think I'd seen it all the way through. And then this one, I hadn't seen anything about it at all. And then I would like see random things about this villain, about how Shen is one of those villains that are just crazy on some random people's top 10 videos. I'm like, who is this dude?
Like he's a peacock, for heaven's sakes.
Dang, peacock. I am not a fan of peacocks. I used to have some, just putting it out there. They are very dumb, but yeah, it was, I have good thoughts.
Try telling
it
that to Lord Shen.
No, they really are. They have their brains are like extremely small and it's like a goldfish. They're crazy.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
So my initial thoughts, you remember in last episode at rotoscopers.com/90, I talked about, okay, don't spoil me because I'm not sure if I've seen this movie or not. And after having seen the movie, I'm still inconclusive as to whether I've seen this movie or not. Because watching it, I definitely remember this big reveal of, you know, that that Poe's dad wasn't really his dad. I'm not quite sure how I would have gotten that from the first movie, because it's not even a storyline or really much of a hint that goes on. And then I do remember Shen, but I don't remember any specifics about this movie, and I would have only have seen this movie in theaters, so I don't know. I'm having quite a lapse in my brain, but I think I have seen it, but I was really glad that I took the time to see it again and to really enjoy it, because this movie really builds upon the universe that they created in the first movie and makes it better. Like, I think this is the movie to watch rather than the first one. The first one actually is quite simple in its narrative.
I'll agree with that.
And Poe's journey. But this film, I felt, just was so much more deep in the concepts and the themes that it explored. Who would have thought that a peacock villain would be so much more terrorizing and deep and just sinister than a snow leopard? But he is. Lung. Yes. So, yeah, I love this movie. Those are my initial thoughts.
Well, for one part, the DreamWorks animation intro is even cooler now.
Mm-hmm.
And they really do up, you know, the hybrid 2D animation in a lot of these sequences.
Yeah.
For this film. It's a very big part of it. And if you stuck around for the credits, the whole credits is quite a treat if you like that style of animation. And quickly it becomes apparent that the moral of the story is that fireworks are evil.
Absolutely.
No, guns are evil. And fireworks.
There weren't guns in this film.
It's implied. let us have our straw man argument.
Yeah.
But
evil, not guns. Have you not seen Happy Gilmore? Guns don't
peacocks
kill people.
Kill people.
I kill people.
Fireworks don't kill people. Peacocks kill people.
Exactly. Or bunnies. So, you know, I thought this fireworks storyline was really dopey. Just because in the very beginning, they have this epic... You know, it almost seems like an origin story. Like, at first you think these are, you know, two godlike peacocks that created the world, but then you realize, okay, they're just some people from about 50 years ago or something. And they brought happiness to the world. And how did they do that? Fireworks. And at first I thought this was going to go somewhere with a little bit more substance. Like, did they bring happiness because they fought hunger? No. Because they stopped poverty? No. It's just fireworks.
Like a magic amulet or something.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Fireworks.
It's just, here's something sparkly to look at. Just ignore all your problems. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, the opening monologue could have been improved on.
I mean, I'm not bashing this in any way, but it just, like, the way that it was going, I thought it was going to go something slightly more epic. Like, and also these two peacocks, just the way that they were animated and how they were flying above the city or whatnot, it made me think of My Little Pony Friendship is Magic, the very first episode of that. There's these two princess ponies who basically, one is the sun, one is the moon, and they basically rule and have harmony. And so I kind of thought that's where this was going. Like,
did you say harmony?
Harmony. Oh, wait, that's your line.
Harmony.
It's you and me together. We can live in harmony.
We gotta just post the music video of that.
I will include that in the show notes for those who have no idea what we're singing.
They gotta know by now. I sing it every episode, I think. It's an interesting intro. But right away, you establish like the main color themes of the film. All right, did you ever see the movie Hero?
No.
From 2004, it has Jet Li... Probably Chow Yun-fat, just because it was that kind of thing. It probably had Ji Zhang, who was, you know, in a lot of those kung fu movies from the 2000s. But that, the use of such thematic color was heavily used in Hero. And so I feel like they took a lot from that concept. In fact, if you watch Hero, a lot of fans refer to the fight scenes in the film by their color. Like, there's the blue fight, there's the green fight. So, but in Kung Fu Panda 2, holy cow, they make some striking colors. I tried to look online for a color script for the film, but if you just go through, like, DisneyScreenCaps.com, you can find Kung Fu Panda 2 and see a lot of that kind of stuff, but...
Oh, that's why you had so many suggestions for for what the thumbnail should be for this episode.
Yeah, where do you think I get all my laptop, all my computer backgrounds, my desktop backgrounds?
DisneyScreenCaps.com.
Yeah, and so, of course, layout. DreamWorks has a very good layout department. They know how to set up a shot digitally to where it's a striking composition, but specifically the use of color, not just how they colored characters, but how they lit certain shots. And, of course, as soon as Shen appears on the scene, You have your whites, your grays, and red, of course, striking blood red. And it works because, as we find out, Shen is a very bloody, violent character. And so, yeah, red was a good choice for you.
So,
and actually, I learned in Chinese culture, white is the color of death. And so that makes sense for him.
Interesting. So just talking in generalities, can we talk about this incredible score? I mean, it takes a lot for a score really to stand out. But this score by Hans Zimmer and John Powell was just so above and beyond amazing. Just the way that it was so lyrical. Like there's one fight scene at the very beginning where Poe is kind of bouncing off the top of a roof, and it just sort of has this ting, 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 ting. Mm-hmm. And just it was able to help dictate exactly what was happening in the scene by the instruments and the melodies that were playing. I think I said this in the last episode. It sort of reminded me of some of the scores from early Disney films in the 40s and 50s. Like, I said this in my review of the Pinocchio soundtrack. I'll include a link to that so you can watch my review. But I felt like the scores back then just were a lot more literal in helping us know what the scene was telling, rather than just big broad strokes, I guess. And I felt this score did that, and it really drew me in.
Yeah, there's that, like you were describing, that first fight scene where they first square off against the wolves. I think the first wolf that starts sword fighting with him, the sword clangs match up to the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's a very creative, like, interweaving of the, because the action, it goes up and down. It's very madcap in this movie. And so it's really cool that the score and the music kind of matches the little comedic beats and, you know, little jabs of adrenaline and, you know, and thrills and ups and downs. And so, yeah, very, very well done score.
Yeah. If you listen to it out of context, it's kind of hard to follow. But when you watch it in, like, they just do a fantastic job of elevating the tone of the dialogue, elevating the tone of the action, of just everything that you see on screen or hear is just so well put together. And I think that the score really does a good job. Like, what's really fun about the DreamWorks, they just have this sense of humor where it just goes back and forth from serious to, like, not serious, and then right back to serious. And, like, it's fun when you understand that that's their humor. And it's like, I like it. I mean, John Powell and Hans Zimmer, they, like, knew that going into it. They knew that this was going to be the way that DreamWorks is, or at least Kung Fu Panda specifically is. And so they're just going to hype that up a little bit more and make it so that on this phrase, it's going to be a little bit back and a little bit forward. Like, it's just, it's fun. They do a really good job.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Well said. So quite a bit of time has passed. Poe is pretty comfortable now as Dragon Warrior. One thing I noticed when I first saw it is that Shifu is kind of he's now the new, like, wise old Oogway, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's an exception at the very end, but for the most part, Shifu isn't the rough and tough, you know, irascible kung fu master that he was in the first film. Now he has achieved inner peace, and he's more, you know, more zen than violent. So that was cool, but I did remember that his role was way, way toned down in the sequel.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. I mean, he got pretty badly beat up by Tai Lung in the last film. And, you know, a few years probably have passed. And so I don't know how long red pandas last. But anyway. And there's such good quotes. And the first one that I thought of watching this one is when Poe's like, "Don't worry, Master Shifu. I'll master inner peace as soon as I get back."
Yeah, not much has changed. He's still kind of takes it serious, but he doesn't take it serious.
Well, it's kind of a foreshadowing because, like, in the end, Poe kind of they kind of joke around that Poe does achieve inner peace, like, very quickly in the film.
And yeah. It's kind of when they're reunited,
right?
Yeah,
kind of the next time they see each other.
It's like, how did you do it so fast and so young?
There's a bit of resentment.
Oh, I love this film because it reminds me of Robin Hood or Disney, how they kind of establish
which
animals are good species of animals and which animals are inherently evil animals. So wolves and gorillas and peacocks are evil. But, like, bunnies and ox and rhino and alligators and crocodiles are good animals. So, and they're kind of scary. They're like these evil hunchback kind of hyena guys. And they all have, you know, curvy swords. You can tell as the bad guy if he has a you know, curvy sword.
Oh, absolutely. You know, these bad guys,
you know, they pull a Jafar.
They sort of reminded me of some of the, just your basic villain, you know, when you're in the middle of the field in Twilight Princess, one of the Zelda games. Like,
oh yeah,
the
those
way
guys.
They moved and walked, they were kind of like just your generic, yeah, I gotta beat you up and whatnot, but, you know, anytime.
And it's interesting how there were no, like, common thugs to beat up on in the first film. But this one, you know, there's a lot more, like, kung fu warfare going on, you know, and then they upped the action a lot to where you have these amazing action scenes where they're fighting off multiple bad guys. And so I guess the script called for an army of evil weasel wolf thugs, you know. And right off the bat in the first fight scene, it's okay. For one, it's evident that they really, really pumped up the not the realism, but the authenticity to Chinese culture. Because they did even more with this. I mean, the animation crew and I think the directors went out to China and they went to a bunch of rural towns and cities and stuff and studied all that. But just the detail and the amount of, like, awesome stuff and little moments that they pack into the animation is just so cool in the sequel. I noticed in the first fight scene and in throughout the film is that Po just, like, throws himself at all the bad guys. And Crane is always there, and he's constantly having to break Poe's momentum before he, like, crashes to the ground. Did you guys notice that? Like, he would just jump off a cliff, and then Crane would, like, dive down and pick him up and just, like, break his fall chest a little bit to where he could scurry off, you know? So little stuff like that was really cool.
Well, going back to what you were saying about how they really tried to make this authentic to Chinese culture, it was only about a year later when we started the podcast. That was when DreamWorks started their kind of partnership with China, and they actually put a studio there, too. So I thought that was just kind of a cool little thing.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And in this scene where they're beating up on all the wolf baddies, it's nice to see the Furious Five, like, actually kicking some butt. Like, they tried to square off against Tai Lung in the first film, but it really didn't go over well for them.
No, it didn't. And they didn't get enough screen time then. And this time they did play off each other's, like, personalities a little bit more. They actually had personalities, some of them. Like, Crane showed off a little bit of his. Like, when have I ever made that sound?
That was funny.
Wings of Justice!
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That move was, like, a typical. It just reminded me of, like, a Sailor Moon. Like, they all have these little, like, bubble beam or like a Pokemon sort of thing.
That's their special attack.
Yeah, exactly. But that's it's very typical where you have to say your attack move as you're doing it. You can't just do it, which gives your, you know, kind of a leg up on your opponent where they know what you're doing. So they could probably avoid it. But
where he's like, Pikachu, use your Thunderbolt attack.
Rock's like, it is no match for my Onix. Haha.
Rock Slide.
Onix. Man, I gotta go back and watch Pokemon Origins.
Yes.
Goffberg. We need to do a Pokemon episode now.
It's time.
It is time. Forget Watership Down.
Oh,
sorry,
yeah,
Sarah.
I don't think that's gonna go over too well. Forget it. The movie that people have wanted for decades.
We're gonna do the 17th Pokemon film out of 30. But anyway, so they're fighting and they do this little gag where there's a little bunny who's playing the mandolin during the fight, and I don't know if that's another hero reference, but there's a fight scene where two guys square off and there's a guy playing the mandolin in the background and the music kind of goes along with the action. So I don't know if hero was like a reference for the film or if hero just has a lot of kung fu tropes that we've come to recognize. But and he also looks like he's some sort of Beatles reference. I don't know, those little round little glasses. Poor bunnies, what? Though.
Yeah, seriously. Bunnies!
Oh, yeah, and then we get into the kind of the meat of the plot is that Poe is about to beat up Wolf Boss, you know, and he sees the insignia.
This mysterious symbol.
Yes, the mysterious symbol from Shen. Who it is or where it came, he knows not, nor does he care. But and it kind of gives him a little flashback of some scary moments in his past that maybe he's been suppressing. And so we go into this whole thing about Poe not having inner peace. And it's weird how It's almost like Shifu knew the moral of the story or Po's like little spiritual journey before it even started to happen. But
that was my only problem with the writing in this. I felt like they needed to have like some type of interaction with Shifu where he was like, you know, brought something back about his childhood or something like that to make him think about it or have some other type of a, I don't know. It felt like it needed something right there to reference later on that he would have these suppressed memories.
Yeah, he just kind of like prophesies about it or hints at it and then Poe's like, oh, all of a sudden I don't have inner peace.
Right. And that was like the only part of this movie that I didn't approve of entirely.
Yeah, and it all ties into the kind of silly thing with Poe. Like, I'm sure Poe always knew that he really wasn't the duck guy's son, biological son, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden he's like, oh, I'm adopted.
Suddenly I have all these emotional issues and struggles. Yeah, now that you say that, that is a big problem that I have with this movie, because he was totally fine. Like, there was some point in him that he had to have known. Like, they have that scene where he's like, but why didn't you mention it? Well, why didn't you mention it?
Yeah.
And so, like, they both knew, but, like, having this confirmation suddenly, like, throws him for a loop, and he can't, and he has this struggle, and he doesn't have inner peace. Not that he had it before, but I don't know. I found it hard that he was always, that suddenly this just became an issue for him. Because yeah, he's so, like, lackadaisical in everything that he does, and he's so chill. I don't really buy that this was, like, why couldn't this just be water off his back like everything else?
Yeah. I think the only clue we have is that maybe he just pushed it in the back of his mind until when he's facing off against Wolf Boss, he first notices Shen's, like, insignia,
mm-hmm.
and that triggers a bunch of, like, long-suppressed memories.
Yeah.
And it's a thing in the film, throughout the film, that encountering the symbol interferes with him fighting. And so it makes it almost impossible to defeat Shen and his minions until he comes to terms with the horrific memories that go along with the symbol. And so that's the only thing. But yeah, at the same time, like, just kind of the timing and the order of the sequence of events of how Poe kind of had this little spiritual journey is fishy and kind of silly. But it doesn't mean the film's bad. It's just of one of those things. Because, you know, a lot of these Marvel films, they do the origin story first, establish that, maybe fight one bad guy, and then you go off and you've
saved the world.
But this one, you know, look at Iron Man, you know. He didn't really get over his alcoholism until the end of the second one, and then there was even more conflict in the third one, inner conflict. And so Kung Fu Panda 2 tried to do an origin story and a, you know, relieve your inner conflict, and I, you know, take a Tums, and in the same film. So yeah, it's kind of a funny thing.
Yeah,
because of that, Kung Fu Panda 2 rivals, in my opinion, it rivals How to Train Your Dragon 2 as the most emotional DreamWorks film.
I'll give him that. It was emotional for me. It did have a great payoff. But that was just my only thing about this movie, is it should have had maybe the insignia a little bit beforehand where he kind of like brushes it off or something. Something that, like, because it was just too quick. Like, well, that was just too quick. But everything else, I was just like, I really like this movie.
And then you come to this realization that there's no pandas in the world. Well, yeah, technically also in this world, from what we've been shown, there's no other tigers and there's no other cranes. Uh-huh. And there's, you know what I mean? But so it would have been, I think the way they could have presented this is in this film, maybe we could have seen a more diverse cross-section of these bigger animals rather than just having, like, general population, our bunnies. You know, we could see maybe some tigers walking in the marketplace and, you know, see all these other creatures, but not pandas, and have him think and wonder, like, am I the last panda? Sort of like the last unicorn. Am I the only one?
They all passed these roads long ago. The Red Bull chasing away.
Oh, man.
The Red Bull, that needs to be the villain in the third film.
That needs to be there.
Yes.
But you know what I mean? I think of just him sitting on the steps, just looking out at the people. And then we could go into that flashback where he has the insignia. That's where this could really have a punch. And it's not going to be like, well, this came out of nowhere. But it is what it is. Seriously, they need to hire us. We're like so good.
Please, we're like the best. Okay. We're like so good. Anyway, I hope maybe I'm speaking too soon, but I hope they go into Tigress's backstory in the third one, because she's like an orphan too. She's the other confirmed orphan in the series. And so, I don't know. Maybe all, apparently it's rumored that there's going to be 6 Kung Fu Panda movies. So, maybe the rest of them will be, relieving the inner conflict of the Furious Five, you know.
That might
Tigress, you must find inner peace. Okay, Mantis, now you must find inner peace.
Oh gosh. You know, speaking of that, in some of the voicemails and in the comments of the last episode that we had done, a lot of people said, oh man, I love Tigress in the second movie. We get to see so much more of her character. And I hadn't seen the second movie, so I was kind of expecting this to be more Tigress-centric. And I didn't feel that at all. Like, maybe they hyped it up way too much for me, because I was like, I felt like this was very Poe. Like, we didn't get hardly any of her. So, I got hyped way too much, but this is not a Tigress story.
Not at all.
I feel like everyone got a few more lines. You know what I mean?
Jackie Chan got 2 lines.
They hardly did anything in the first film, but in this one they're more of a team, you know, there's more banter and dialogue together. And then what I think they're trying to say is that Tigress really opens up emotionally in this film, and you get to peel back some of her layers. You know what I mean? Because there's a moment where she has to pretty much banish Poe and forbid him being Chen because he's not strong enough yet. Mm-hmm. And instead of beating him up to make him stay, she gives him a little tiger hug.
Aww.
Just a little tiger hug. She should have been purring. and that makes everyone's jaw drop because they're like, Tigress hugging?
What?
Other people? And
physical affection?
But yeah, and then and the whole thing goes into, she probably realized, hey, I'm an orphan too, and Poe shouldn't feel like he's alone in this, you know? And so I feel like her relationship with Poe is a lot more warm and close than in the first film, where she's like, I should have been the Dragon Warrior. You are just a stupid panda, and you know, you'll never convince me that you're the Dragon Warrior, you know? And then at the end, she has respect for him. And so I think that's what they're trying to say. And that's what I was saying in the last episode, how they kind of go into her character a little more, but only somewhat. I hope they expand her role even more in the third film.
She's really interesting. Out of all those other characters, I think Tigress is, you know, the biggest character to me. I would love to learn more about her. Viper is number 2. Maybe Crane. I don't know. I don't really care too much about Mantis or Monkey.
No, really.
Mantis. Seth Rogen. Yeah. Get him out of here. But anyway, if they just killed off Mantis in the third film, I'd just be happy. But anyway,
maybe they need to have tryouts again for the Furious Five, and one of them gets cut.
Ooh.
Oh, sweet.
Ooh. Snap.
Making the varsity squad, and who's on the bench?
Oh, who's on the bench? But yeah. But yeah, and then Viper too, you know, but I really hope they get more into Tigress. You know, what's interesting about this franchise is it's very emotional, but unlike How to Train Your Dragon, there's no love interest. There's no romance anywhere.
Ooh.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, you don't need a girl.
Yeah. Don't need any.
He just
girls.
Needs food. There is no time for a love interest with Poe.
There's no. I don't know. Maybe in the third one when he meets the Poe village.
Ooh, but yeah.
Wrapping up how emotional the film is. There's the part they really go into his relationship with his dad. I mean, his duck dad. You know.
He's a
For one, I love that he's serving tofu now. Do you remember in the first film where he's
noodles.
Like, one time I had a dream. He had this crazy dream that I was going to make tofu, you know, and now he's making tofu. So he must have followed his tofu dream in between the end of Kung Fu Panda 2.
That's true. There's not a noodle in sight.
And he's like, well, you know, ducks, little ducks hatch from eggs. And don't ask me where the egg comes from.
It's a goose.
I love how awkward he is. He's just a great character.
He is awesome.
And this... he's so sad to see Kung Fu Panda 2. Sorry. I'm referring to the character as Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah, I really want noodles now.
I know. Oh, it's like that one episode where we talked about those little girls that you're talking to who referred to Rapunzel as Tangled and not Rapunzel.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, I just referred to Poe as Kung Fu Panda. But anyway, he's so sad to see Poe go and fight off Shen, you know, yeah. Especially after thinking about how much of a fun journey it was to raise little baby Poe. Come on. He is too adorable to handle.
Little change.
Baby animals are to die for. They're so cute.
It's to die for.
Well, Scar would just eat them. But, yeah, I thought that was a cute little...
He could have just eaten Simba.
The radish box, all that stuff.
Oh, the radish. There's a little radish motif throughout the whole film. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, in all, there are some really tender moments. And more so the stuff with the duck dad were the moments where I got emotional watching. And so you can take this one to the bank. Kung Fu Panda 2 was one of the few animated films to get old Mason all teary-eyed.
Oh, you got teary-eyed? I did too.
I did, but I got even more so with How to Train a Dragon 2, but there's all sorts of personal stuff weaved in there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's do a complete 180 and talk about the nastiest character in the film, the evil villain. Evil! Lord Shen of the Peacock.
Can you do his voice?
No, no one can match Goldman. He has such great lines. Okay, let me bring up a quote. Let me see. Because he doesn't have an Asian accent.
No. No, just every time he was talking on screen, I'm like, I love you. His voice was amazing. And just the way that he was able to, you know, do his dialogue.
The only reason you are alive is that I find your stupidity mildly amusing. I can't do it, Gary Oldman, but if I did a fan dub, he would sound like that.
Yeah.
Who do you think you are, Panda? Who do you think I am, Peacock? Why are we laughing? That's such an awkward part. There are some really fun, awkward moments between Poe, who doesn't take anything seriously, and he's still just a Kung Fu fanboy, and Lord Shen, who is extremely grave and sinister.
Oh, I love it. Were you looking for me? I said that too soon, didn't I?
I love it. He's like, scars can heal. No, they can't. Wounds heal. Then what do scars do? Anyway, still doesn't have this whole kung fu hero thing right. But anyway, I think Shen is an awesome villain. Did we ever write about him on our animated villains?
I don't think
yes,
so.
We did.
Oh, we
yes,
did?
Did?
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. He was one of the few non-Disney ones that made the cut.
Yeah, no kidding. But he's just great. One, his voice. I mean, Gary Oldman really rocks it. I love it when he's a bad guy.
I just love the fact that it's Detective Gordon. Like, Commissioner Gordon is from The Dark Knight is Shen. That's so cool.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, he's all over the place. Sirius Black. He was in the latest Planet of the Apes. But, yeah, I think he's a very versatile actor. And then he just really had that very regal but evil voice down for this character. But Shen himself is, I did a little research and the technical directors for his character commented that animating Shen was so complex. It was like animating five or six characters at once.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
it was his thing. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Birds for one are very complex. They have like joints and bones and points of rotation and pivot that, you know, regular bipedal human characters don't have. And that's what makes them such interesting examples of animated characters is that birds are very complex, you know? Mm-hmm. And I got the same vibe from Owls of Ga'Hoole, which I actually like. I don't know if anyone really watched it or caught onto it, but I thought it was a good film. And the birds are very cool in there. And then, of course, on the more cartoony side, you have Rio 2. They have some very cool bird animation, and I don't know why I'm so fascinated by them, but
maybe it's your destiny to one day animate a bird.
Oh yeah,
totally is.
Tweet. Well, I am doing a project where I'm animating a deer, a wolf, and a snake.
Close enough.
Close enough. That's practically
Fantastic
a bird.
Four.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, the animators did a terrific job of integrating Shen's like bird anatomy into his fighting style. Apparently he does a style of kung fu where you use an iron fan to attack but also distract your opponent. And of course he has his own fan. He has his tail that he uses to distract and disorient his victims. And so everything from his tail kind of swooping like a cape behind him to hiding all these knives and blades underneath his wings, and he's just a master of like deception and traps, and he plays dirty, you know. And his character design is just like sharp. That's the only word I can really use to describe his character design. Because he has very delicate, very like sharp looking ornaments on his feet, you know, and his beak. Yeah. And his little headdress. So everything about him is just very sinister. In fact, when you first see him fight Master Ox, Master Croc, and Master Rhino, he walks into the scene and this just giant red shadow follows him and just envelops the whole scene. And soon enough, when they start fighting, all of the cast shadows turn red instead of black, which is really cool. It's another example of the dynamic colors used in the lighting. And then, of course, he has this cannon, which just blows old Master Rhino out of the water and threatens to destroy all Kung Fu.
You know,
but I just got Kung
threat.
Fu. I love awesome that line. Oh, yeah. There's this one little moment where his duck dad is like, no, I don't want Po to go because I love him. And Tigress is like, don't worry. He'll be back before you can say noodles. And I'm like, Tigress, comedy is just not your strong point. Please stop trying.
That's awesome.
They should have played that moment more where they're like, what? No, this just doesn't work. I don't know.
Comedy is not your calling.
Also, we get two new Kung Fu masters. Master Ox, who's he's the guy from the Allstate commercials. I'm just kidding. It's Dennis Haysbert. I know him best as President Palmer on 24. But also, Jean-Claude Van Damme voices Master Croc, and he only has like two lines.
Why are you paying so much for two lines?
Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to read how much they pay their voice actors. This is something I'd be really interested in. How much these big Hollywood studios pay to contract these voice actors to come in and do to come in and do their voices. I would like to learn more about that.
So, listeners, if you have more information, please tweet Mason at MasonSMTX. He wants to know more.
Let's talk.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
Like two lines, really. I mean, I'm curious. 30,000? 50,000? 10,000?
Well, I'm sure he
5,000
more
pounds.
Than that. I'm sure he recorded more than that. That's just all they kept. Because listening to, you know, one I really love, if you have not listened to Mason's interview with Christopher Knight, definitely go and listen to that. Because he is... Yeah, he's not a huge voice actor, but he's had some really cool lines. And
yeah, he's great.
That was a really cool interview. I enjoyed it a lot.
And while Mr. Van Damme doesn't have very good lines, Poe really racks up the awesome quotes. He's like, nerves of steel, souls of platinum. Stealth mode. Crunk did it first, but still Poe does a good job of not nailing stealth mode. And then throughout the film, he's put into conflict with Lord Shen. And then another thing about Lord Shen is I love when the villain is like an anti-parallel to the protagonist. Mm-hmm. You know, Darth Vader is what could happen to Luke Skywalker if he follows the dark side, you know,
mm-hmm.
and let hate be your ally, JK. But anyway, Shen represents, he has inner conflict. He has mommy and daddy issues, and I like Viper, where she's like, quiet, Mantis, it is Poe who is freaking out. But anyway, Shen represents, well, maybe he could be a vision of what Poe might become if he does not settle his conflict and find inner peace.
Yikes.
Because Shen was determined to take happiness by conquest and by dominating all of China.
Mm-hmm. You know, isn't that the eternal battle? Somebody who just wants more power.
I know. It's like Voldemort said, there is no good and evil. There is only power. Those too weak to seek it. Your wand, Lucius. I'm just kidding. I should do another video where I do my non-animated voices.
Jason Dubs.
She would have Muggles mate with them. Anyway. But Shen has this awesome scene with the soothsayer goat lady, which that's a whole other topic, who we all thought was a man, I suppose. And he's like, I don't know, just the animators do such a good job of selling how much turmoil is in Lord Shen. It's one of those, like, ain't you tired kind of things where he's like, dude, does he really want to kill all these people and take over all of China? But he does think he has to do it because he has to make it right how much his parents hated him. And he thinks that the only way he can distance himself from betraying his family is by just diving deeper and deeper and deeper into this bloody conquest and just kind of heaping up a bunch of layers on top of his inner turmoil.
You know, he sort of has the same issue that Tai Long had. Where Tai Long, all he wanted to do was to please Shifu. And then there's that one moment where he could see in Shifu's eyes that he was disappointed with him when he was trying to steal the dragon scroll. And this is the same thing, because there's that part of one of these flashbacks where, you know, you see the parents and they're both like, aghast at what he's doing.
Like, Mom, Dad, I just slaughtered all the pandas. Are you proud of me? They're like, what?
You're a monster.
And it's kind of the same thing. Then he's like, oh, well, I need to prove that to them to make them happy. And so, which I'd never really noticed until this moment.
Evil fireworks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how about that? How about that Baba sheep, ram ram, goat lady?
She's interesting. You know, she's so condescending to Shen. I wonder why she still hangs out with him. At the same time, why he just doesn't punish her for the mean things that she says and kill her, basically.
Because she can see the future.
Yes, but it's not helping him. Let's just put it that way. No. Her future is not good.
If you continue on your current path, you will reach the bottom of the stairs. What? You're just telling me the present? The future? But anyway, I thought the soothsayer had some pretty funny moments. But yeah, it is kind of funky. Like, why doesn't he just kill her? Maybe it's a pride thing for him. He wants to see the look on her face when he proves her wrong and conquers all of China.
Probably right. Plus, she's his only friend. Kind of.
And she kind of drifts around where she's needed, right?
Yeah, well, so I don't know if I'm jumping way far ahead, but there's this, you know, big battle where the Furious Five come and Po gets hurt, right? And then she leaves and she saves him with acupuncture, which isn't that always the answer. As someone who's just been referred to an acupuncturist, the answer is yes.
Well, we can't all be acupuncturists. No, your husband had to be a cross-dresser. We could have a Kung Fu Panda versus Mulan death match.
So
what I think is even more sinister is that Po is trying to come to terms with his past, and he has this vision of his mom running away from him, and Shen, maybe he's jealous or something, but Shen tries to put it into his head that his parents abandoned them and that they hated him. And for just a tiny part of the movie, that was kind of Poe's fear, you know, of the unknown. Like, why did my parents give me up? Why was I orphaned? And what's very evil about Shen is that he tries to get into his head with it.
You know, is she a kung fu master? Master?
Master? I don't know if she's the master there, Morgan. she's just psychic. She doesn't, she's not like Ungwei. Right?
No.
From the first one?
Yeah, or Shifu. No, yeah, it's not just
like Ungui or Shifu, who are like mystic but also kung fu masters.
Yeah, she's able to help him in a way that no one else is. You know, stop fighting, let it flow. And I thought that was just some really interesting advice. Like, sometimes you just have to stop fighting and go with, you know, what God wants for you or what you feel is the right path for you instead of what you just want to do. Because once he does that, things start working and he's able to see these flashbacks, which he's been so stifled with. But he wants to find out what happens, but he just can't get past that because of the symbol. And you also learn he's a waterbender during this scene. So I'm like, isn't that the...
Oh, yes.
Are we burying the lead there? I mean, this is important.
It is.
So, anyways. And then she's, I like where he's kind of rejuvenated. He's excited. And she says, your story
I'm
may not.
I'm Poe, and I'm going to need a hat.
Well, before this, says your story may not have a happy beginning, but that doesn't make who you are. The rest of the story, who you choose to be. And I thought that was just like one of the lines that is one of the whole themes of this. It's like, doesn't matter what happened to you in the past or what your beginning is or where you came from. Really, the most important thing is where you are now and where you're going.
Yeah, this actually had a really big impact on me because last night I was talking to a friend of mine and he was telling his story about when, I mean, you look, he's actually like a very successful guy. And then to look at him, he's like so happy, so gung ho, like the happiest guy. And just like, he's got all the energy in the world. And he's like, yeah, but I grew up, you know, I have 8 parents, you know, I've seen blood on my parents from them fighting. I have however many brothers and sisters because I just come from a really bad broken home, but I chose to just keep going and to make my own way. And like, it hit me so hard because you would look at this guy today and you would never have guessed that he had anything but the perfect childhood. Or the perfect life in general, but just to look at how just complete opposite his life is today versus then, it was just amazing. So I looked at him from last night when I was talking to him, and then this moment, I totally got teary-eyed because I was like, oh, it's so true.
Yeah. Well, she talks about the rest of the story is who you choose to be. You don't have to keep going down the dark path that you think you're on. But at the same time, you still need to acknowledge and come to terms with your past. You know, sometimes to think that, you know, in a spiritual sense, we do have a destiny and we do have a path. And sometimes we are taken through a path or carried through a path rather than treading the path that we want. Mm-hmm. And we still have to come to terms with that. And the movie does an excellent job of balancing the two, kind of a yin and yang thing. Don't you agree?
That was a theme. Panda. I loved during one of the final battles, you just see this hint of a yin-yang, which is kind of one of the things that Shen had been seeing this whole time. Like, a panda will destroy you.
Right. A warrior of black and white. Mm-hmm. Right. Poe has his extreme low point, and then he finds inner peace, and he conquers it.
How do you feel about him having to find inner peace? Because that was sort of a subplot in the first film. Do you like that it was...
With Shifu,
Yeah, that it was brought back... In the second film.
I do because it makes for a more dynamic film when a warrior or a hero has to fight someone who can match him physically, but also spiritually. They do it real well in some of these comic book universes, like Batman did really well with this, with The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises. Both villains in those films were formidable in combat, but they also... brought Batman's spirit to a breaking point almost. Mm-hmm. And so it's always more of a payoff to see a hero take a fall and then rise up and overcome both physically but also spiritually. And mm-hmm. I think it had to be Poe in this film, and I hope they don't go into Tigress, you must find inner peace now in the next film. But I'm fine with Poe because he gets a little more somber and a little more serious. Not that his character completely changes, but you know, there's a shot where he is going to do his inner peace technique against the cannonballs. And I always remembered his face. His face is just this very calm, concentrating, you know, very peaceful expression on his face. And then he ups the intensity and starts deflecting the cannonballs. And that shot right there is just brilliant. And it shows that Poe has matured, although he's still kind of the rambunctious warrior that he always was. But yeah, way quicker than Master Shifu.
Mm-hmm. Skadoosh.
Anyway, I like how he shows up, you know, all dramatic on the rooftop. He's like, Lord Shen, a panda stands between you and China. And he goes on with his monologue and then it zooms out and no one can hear him.
Because it's calling, you know, to light something that, you know, films see past. In most films, yeah, I could hear you from clear across the town, but this points out that, yeah, that's kind of stupid. Of course no one can hear him.
I love that part.
I also love that part when he's kind of deflecting those balls of fireworks and whatnot, and he can't quite hit the target. It kind of reminded me of Legend of Zelda Link to the Past, where some of the bosses, you just had to swipe your sword and it would deflect back this like ball of energy to the villain and whatnot.
Aghanim.
He needed to play a few more video games to master that. He's not so good.
Oh man. I bet he would. I bet he would play a lot of video games if it was during a time period.
Yes, he would.
Anyway,
that
yeah.
Is no
so,
question.
Yeah, very cool finale. Well, I love the entire finale. I love the you know epic boss fight, and then Lord's you know Shen's you know his evil nature is so manifest, and he's so driven to let no one stand in his way that he's like, all right, shoot the cannon right there. And he's like, and the wolf boss is like, no, we can't do that. They're going to hurt our own. And when he won't do it, Shen just has enough with him and he just kills him.
Yeah. Yikes.
And does the cannon himself. Of course, finally he gets blown up. There's one tiny little fight scene between Poe and Shen where Poe actually has a little bit of mercy on him. And he's like, look, you know, you don't have to do this. You know, I've found inner peace and, you know, you don't have to keep going on this path. The future is what you choose it to be, you know? And he's like, very well, then I choose this, you know? And he's like, no, stop. You'll get crushed by your own cannon. What? I'm not listening. Cause I'm too evil. You know, kind of a Clayton type of death. There we go.
Somebody chided me the other day because I haven't been using the Thunder Tube enough. I'm like, I'm sorry,
you
man.
You can't overuse the Thunder Tube,
I know,
man.
You can't.
Nah,
it's like the Skadoosh. You yeah. only use it when it needs it.
Exactly.
That's true. Yeah, and I like how in every finale, you know, there's this epic explosion, but somehow all explosives turn into fireworks at the end.
Everyone's like, you know, yay, it's the like everything, fireworks!
It's like everything's all right. And it's like, oh, Lord Shen did have just plain old fireworks. So, like, maybe he was just going to spread fireworks around by the sword instead of just conquest. He's like, you there, you will all bow down before my fireworks show! Woo! You know?
Yes.
But anyway, I don't know if Shen survived. If you go frame by frame, you can kind of see him getting crushed by his cannon in the background, but it's not certain. So I wonder if he'll come back like Scarecrow in The Dark Knight as just a cameo, but I think he's gone for good.
Yeah, we don't need any more of him. On to bigger and better things.
But anyway.
So,
and then one more thing I want to say about the finale. Sorry, Morgan.
No, I think you're going right to it.
One last thing I want to say about the finale is, well, like I said, the use of color, how Shen's theme, whenever he gains power, when he's on the scene, everything's very red. And then Poe and the rest of the gang's color is very yellow. So it's interesting at the very end when Poe is personally facing off against Shen, his cast shadow is still red, but Poe's is black. And then the yellow color that I guess represents, you know, the good guys, you know, the golden sunshine slowly conflicts and clashes with the red that represents Shen's, you know, brutality and murderous nature. And then at the end, all the red kind of goes away and we're kind of washed into this golden sunlight color. And so the colors in this film, which represents different things, literally come into conflict with each other compositionally. And that's very interesting. And mm-hmm. I think that's another reason why I think Kung Fu Panda stands out from the other films. It's just visually it is very stylized, but it's such a unique style from all other DreamWorks films that people set it apart as a more of an epic movie. Mm-hmm. Also, the extremely random reveal at the very end.
Yeah, that was, you know, I was like, what?
Yeah, apparently.
My son is alive.
How did he know that? Like, it just came out of nowhere. Mystic. Like, I mean, it was kind of it was kind of like a Rafiki moment in my head. I was like, what?
Well, suddenly, because he found inner peace, then that signified that he had awakened? I don't know.
Yeah.
He was alive this whole time. Why did they come back?
Like Chelsea said, they should have done the scene where a little piece of Poe's fur flies off and he goes on a 1,000-mile journey and it's caught by him and he's like, Poe? You know, and then he puts on a little more layers onto the little Poe drawing on the tree. He's a knife!
But know. Did we need this? I mean, I guess now we do, because this is kind of one of the main points of plot for the third film. But he already had inner peace. Like, he'd come to grips about who he was. The goose was still his dad, even though he wasn't his dad. But, like, you're my true, you're my dad. And I feel like this revelation is just going to cause even more lack of inner peace. It's going to bring him back to the level that he doesn't need to be. It's going to be more pain and confusion. It's like, oh, you were alive the whole time? But I guess that's what that creates drama for the third film.
Oh, how I love the drama. So, yeah, it definitely sets up the third film. And I don't know. I think it came on the coattails of some of these Marvel films where, like, the after credit scene or the very last scene has to be this, like, epic reveal that gets everyone excited for the sequel, you know?
Like, can't we just process the movie we just saw without having to think about the sequel?
No.
Okay.
Never mind. So that's a simple answer. That was easy. But anyway... So then the credits are very visually, they're very delightful. But I also, I like to see who's in the credits. Guillermo del Toro as creative consultant. I feel like he's everywhere.
Kind of
everywhere.
Is. He's a talented guy.
Yeah. Also, I like to do this a lot. Check this out. I counted 26 character technical directors for Kung Fu Panda 2. And of course, there was a larger cast in this film than a lot of other animated films. But 26 character TDs, only 2 concept artists. So if you're listening and you want a better chance of getting hired in the animation industry, learn technical skills. Because they only hire 2 of these guys per film, you know. But they hire a ton of technical directors. Well, that and software writing. I just read on Worth a Mention that the animation industry is being more open to people who know how to write software and more closed to people who just know how to draw. So you have to know all those things now. And it makes me happy to be at A&M as a visor. But seriously, like, technical skills are in such high demand. You know, How to Train Your Dragon 2, it took them 3 years to develop their animation software and bring it to that level. Someone had to write all that code, you know? Mm-hmm. Someone had to do all the technical work on that. So anyway, just a little plug in there.
All right, guys. So what would you rate this film?
Oh, man. I forgot what I rated Kung Fu Panda 1. 4 stars, right?
Yeah, we're 4 stars all around.
Mm-hmm.
Dang. All right. I'll give it 4.5 stars. Panda 2 is not quite at The Lion King, which is my staple film for 5 stars.
Mm-hmm.
But it is really, really good. And it is an improvement on the first one.
Yeah, I like that too.
We discussed, there was some story stuff and some plot stuff that was a little out of order in my opinion. But other than that, just terrific action, terrific art style, and a terrific story. Way to go, DreamWorks.
The fact that it made me cry gives it 4.5 stars. Like, it had that moment where I was like, oh, I get you. So I'll give it 4.5 as well.
I'm sort of on the fence between 4 and 4.5. This is definitely much better than the first film, which I gave 4 stars. But I don't know. It's like, is it 4.5? 4.5 is quite good for me. So, yes, I'm going to give it 4.5 because I did like this. I was involved with the villain. I thought he was great. I loved Poe's journey. I loved that we got to see a little bit more of these other characters. Now the real question is, can the third film be a 5-star film? Ooh.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to set myself up for disappointment. I'm just going to have a blank slate, open mind with it, and hopefully it'll just blow us away. Like Lord Shen's Cannon of Terror, I hope it just blows me out of a tower and into the Tangzi River or whatever.
Perfect.
Which, sorry, I was going to mention this earlier. Every time DreamWorks does anything with water makes me really happy because they're so good at water.
Awesome.
Anyway.
I'm going to be a water artist for DreamWorks.
It's good.
Jumping into our listener Twitter question, we asked you guys on Twitter, what is your favorite scene or quote from Kung Fu Panda 2 and why? Princess Gem says, the last part, because it was leading to more of this awesome franchise and has a good way to keep the story going well. Smiley face. Eric says, I'm your son. A touching moment that makes it hard for me to pick between the Kung Fu Panda movies.
Oh, here's one from Brianna. She says, easily the final battle. Shows how much Po has come since the first Kung Fu Panda. Oh, that's pretty good. Gianna Lee says, the whole thing, KFP2. I like that. Kung Fu Panda 2 was an awesome-mazin' movie. So, yeah, awesome and amazing with an apostrophe. Po went on an amazing journey, and it's so beautiful from start to finish. Hashtag great movie. And finally, our very own Brandon Smith says, the action sequences, all of them. Good choice.
Yes. Yes, they were all amazing. So thank you guys. Make sure to follow us on Twitter so that way you can give us your thoughts whenever we ask for a listener Twitter question. And we'll definitely be asking one of those for our next movie, Watership Down.
Whoop. All right, folks, it is time for our mailbag of voicemails. So we're going to crack it open, dive right in, see what comes out.
Hi, Rotoscopers. My name is Katie. This is my first voicemail. I was always a little nervous about doing this because I always sound weird over the phone and in recordings. Okay, so I heard you guys were doing Kung Fu Panda and Kung Fu Panda 2. I love these movies. I actually saw Kung Fu Panda 2 twice in theaters because my cousin had a birthday party when she went to see it. What I really like about these movies, well, first, I love Po. He's hilarious. And I love Tigress because she's, like, really cool. She's, like, this is a little younger, and I know they've done this a lot, but she's just really a strong female character. And I just like how she, like, if she gets offended, she just smacks you, and it's awesome. Two of my favorite scenes were when the bad guy in the first movie escapes jail because, like, this really intense scene, and you're just like, oh, my gosh, this guy is intense. He's scary. You want to run from this guy. And I also think that, okay, your coat is really weird. Are you, like, in radioactive something or other? Because that's a really unnatural coat color. I don't know. Maybe there's some species out there that actually has it. I don't know. I'm not a biologist. My other favorite scene is when Po is eating those snacks in the kitchen, and the sensei comes and he's just like, oh, by the way, Monkey hides cookies on the top of the shelf somewhere. And he turns around. And 3 seconds later, Po is up there in the little space between the cabinets in a perfect splits, eating the cookies really fast. I cracked up when I first saw that. It's amazing. So the second movie I also love, one, because it's a continuation of a really good story. Two, they have a different plot line, which is also cool. And they expand Tigress's character a little bit more. They have her a little closer relationship with Po, which is really cool. And the villain was really cool because he had those needle feather like things that just like shot out and were epic, and he used a lot of fireworks and stuff, and I love fireworks. Who doesn't love fireworks? I also totally called that there would be a third movie. One, usually you don't have two movies unless there's a third. That's kind of a trend that I feel like only Peter Pan and Pocahontas has and The Rescuers have broken. So I can count a few, but still, usually you make three movies or more. So I totally called it to be a third movie because at the very end, ooh, spoiler alert, please play this at the end. I don't want anybody being spoiled at this. You find Po's dad alive at this, like, very camp full of it. And I'm just like, there's a third movie talking about his family, and I cannot wait because, I don't know, he's the only panda. And you always wonder, well, what happened to all the other pandas? And this crazy peacock dude killed them all. And, oh, there's more! I mean, how could there not be more? It's like extermination. Genocide never works. Just saying. It doesn't. People can hide pretty well. I remember the TV series, and I remember not liking it, because you can never do CGI to TV series at the same level you can do the movies, and that was always so frustrating. But I did see the Furious Five Secrets, and I thought that was adorable and could truly expand on their characters. Okay, I'm about at my 2-minute max, so I'm just going to say goodbye. You guys are hilarious, and I love your podcast. Bye.
Okay, thank you, Katie. I loved your super, super long voicemail. See, this is why we have the voicemail, guys, so you guys can just give us your thoughts about the movie, rant and rave. I loved how Katie was talking about what she liked from the first movie and the second movie. I definitely agree, Tigress is pretty darn cool, so is Po. And Shen, which we've talked to death in this podcast, I think we all agree that he's an incredible villain. And so Kung Fu Panda 3, let's just talk about this why we're here. Are you excited for Kung Fu Panda 3, Mason?
Yeah, they left it open for the third part after this film. And so, yeah, I'm pretty excited for it. I mean, it's hard to top Shen as a villain. You know, they might do, you know, they have the wolf guy, so there might be multiple villains in this one. And so I read up on a few of the new characters and and stuff. I really tried not to spoil myself because I am pretty invested into this franchise. But yeah, I am excited for Kung Fu Panda 3. If it can combine the heart of Kung Fu Panda 2 with like the technology of DreamWorks' more recent films, like How to Train Your Dragon 2, then I know it's just going to be beautiful. I think people like this film just because it's a style apart from all of, you know, the rest of the DreamWorks films. And so this is a franchise I definitely want to see a third movie of.
Yeah, definitely. And so there is an amazing article by one of our writers, Max. He's kind of our designated DreamWorks writer, and he is so good. He does such a great job about posting about DreamWorks news. Right now, he's posting about Home, which we can talk about that another time. It's not getting as much attention as I think it should. But he also posted some really cool information about Kung Fu Panda 3, which it was supposed to come out December 2015, but it got pushed back because it was kind of around the same time as Star Wars. So eventually that chicken, you know, that game of chicken.
Among other things.
Yeah, they said, okay, never mind, we give in. And so it's now going to be March 2016, which is kind of around the same time as Zootopia. So it'll be interesting to see all these animal movies. I guess it's springtime. All the animals are coming out.
Attack
of
the animals!
but I'll include a link in the show notes. I don't want to spoil anyone who's not interested in spoiling it, because it's hard to like skip spoilers on a podcast, because we have to say, okay, skip to 13:29 if you don't want to listen to spoilers.
Yep.
So anyways, I have read these little new plot synopsis for this movie. There's some really cool new characters, one voiced by Rebel Wilson, one voiced by Bryan Cranston of Breaking Bad fame. And I'm not going to give too much away, but if that final scene with the panda doesn't kind of indicate where this new movie is going, then I'm sorry, but it is. So that's all I have. I'll include a link in the show notes. Definitely go check it out. Okay, our next email is from Sarah.
Hello, Rotoscopers. It's me, Sarah, again. Yes, I am leaving another voicemail because I love the podcast so much. And yeah, I am so excited about your upcoming podcasts, mainly Washed Down. Surprise, surprise. And the two Kung Fu Panda movies, because I love those movies so much. I remember going to see the first one in theaters. I didn't get to see the second one in theaters for some reason. I don't know why either. I saw the first one when I went on my very first mission trip, and I just loved it. I remember when I was in middle school, I just thought it was the funniest thing. And at the time, it was my favorite DreamWorks movie until How to Train Your Dragon came out. Then that took its place. The second one is really good. It's a lot heavier. Oh, my gosh. It's a very heavy children's movie, but it's so good. And the villain is better from what I remember. No, maybe he's not. I can't remember. I only kind of remember him. But wasn't he voiced by Sirius Black from Harry Potter, or am I thinking of a different character? And, oh, my gosh, where is it down? Also, I just saw the news about the BBC remake, and I am so excited. I hope it's better than the TV show they did back in the 90s. I hated the TV show because they boulderized it. Is that how you say that? They made it too childish. And they made Fiverr kind of a wimp. And, yeah. Anywho, I hope you guys have a good day. I wanted you guys to know that one of my current catchphrases is, well, according to the rotoscopers, because I say that pretty much every day or at least twice a week. Bye, guys. I hope you guys have a wonderful day. I love you, Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea. You guys are amazing. And keep calm and enjoy animation. Bye. Thanks for listening.
Ha! You know, I think that we should make bumper stickers that say, according to the rotoscopers, .. or it should be like a hashtag, ATTR, according to the rotoscopers.
At first I thought she was going to say, according to my research, because that also
is Magic
quote,
School Bus.
A quote that we quote quite a bit on here, but she wasn't going that way.
Hey, Rotoscopers, it's Esther. I'm thrilled to hear you're doing Kung Fu Panda in the sequel. I just want to share some thoughts of mine. First of all, this film was a pleasant surprise to me. Originally, I was not too enthusiastic. I thought it would all be potty humor or a parody of martial arts. And instead, the comedy comes from the timing and the visual gags. I really love the part where Po comes out of the bamboo kind of balancing on the stilts and has a heartfelt message. It's one where a story where the master has to learn as much as the student. And Po is just such a lovable fanboy. You have evil fanboys like Syndrome from The Incredibles who turns his passion into destruction. And then you have Po, who's just so innocent that you just can't help but love him. And I think we can also kind of identify with the keeping the action figures on the desk. I have some Funko Pops at my office, and I love to play with them and get the, oh my gosh, you're so awesome moments there. You also talked about the message of the Dragon Scroll, that it's blank, and how do you just believe something, it's special, and it is. And I would say the message is that there is no magic talisman for success. You have to work at it, and then the success will come out of you, as Po always could have been the Dragon Master, but he had to get the teacher to bring it out of him. And as regards to the sequel, I will quote the Nostalgia Critic in saying that the sequel, it increases everything that the first one has, the drama and the emotion and the action, but just does it so well. I enjoy the villain. He's more of a schemer than a bully. He's more bent on pride than jealousy, but he fits so well into the story. And who can't love the flashback sequence of Po as a baby? I mean, animals are cute, babies are cute, baby pandas, absolutely adorable. So enjoy it, and in the words of the late Leonard Nimoy, live long and prosper.
Listening to this episode, it has been such a blast to do these back-to-back DreamWorks films and Kung Fu Panda 1, Kung Fu Panda 2. Man, I just love this series, and I'm kind of bummed that we don't have Kung Fu Panda 3 to follow up, but don't worry. This time next year, we'll do Kung Fu Panda 3. So for show notes for this episode, be sure to go to rotoscopers.com/91. That's where you can leave your comment and your own review about this episode, about this movie, and you can also discuss with other fans. And if you're tweeting about this on Twitter, go to #AnimAddicts or #Addicts91 to talk about the specific episode. Also, you can send us a voicemail. Our next episode is going to be Watership Down, which is huge. People, this is probably like a cult classic, a film that is probably one of our number one most requested episodes. So get your voicemails in at rotoscopers.com/voicemails or give us a call at 406-646-6575. You can support the show in lots of different ways. You can use our Amazon affiliate link. You can go to rotoscopers.com/Amazon. But guys, I have something really cool to share with you. We also have new links for some of our worldwide listeners. So if you're in Canada, you can use rotoscopers.com/AmazonCA. If you are in the UK, you can use rotoscopers.com/AmazonUK. If you are in Italy, you can use rotoscopers.com/AmazonIT. If you're in France, you get the picture, right? So I'm going to include all those new Amazon links in the show notes of every single episode, so that way you can click your respective country. There are some countries that we can't do because you have to have a bank account in that country. So no, I'm very sorry. Japan, we can't get an Amazon link there. But all those other countries, we would appreciate it if... Oh, China too. So figures, the movie we're doing about China. but for all those other countries, definitely check out those links, because by shopping at Amazon using our affiliate link, it helps support the show so we can keep this going for you guys. And of course, if you like Audible books, rotoscopers.com/audible. And my last little plug, rotoscopers.com/store. This is where you can buy the Roto shirt. We have a little bit left. We're running out of a few sizes. So if you're a medium and you've been holding out, I would recommend purchasing, because I think we only have about 6 mediums left. So time is of the essence. Those are only $12. So if you've kind of been on the fence, for about 2 cups of coffee, you can buy a Rotoscoper shirt and you can show off your Roto pride. Lastly, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. You can listen to us on Stitcher. You can find us on Hypeable, Animated Views, and of course, all great social media accounts. I'm Morgan Stradling. You can find me at Twitter at Morgan Stradling. I'm not at Twitter. I wish. They have a lot of followers, but I'm at Morgan Stradling. You can find Chelsea Robson on Twitter at Chelsea Robson. And I'll let Mason tell you where you can find him.
Oh, yeah. At Mason SMTX is my Twitter handle. You can also check out my student / semi-professional portfolio, masonsmithportfolio.com. And every now and then I'll post a little something on my blog, thisanimatedlife.blogspot.com. And there you can see kind of like more recent school projects that I'm doing. I am studying the field of animation. So, you know, for those who care, it's fun to kind of watch the kind of projects that I do.
Yes, it is. All right, guys, that is all we have for you. Again, thank you so much for your support, your love, your comments, your tweets. You guys are amazing. I love being part of this Roto community. And until our next episode, which is the amazing Watership Down.
The fur's gonna fly.
We are the Rotoscopers. Okay, perfect. So I'm going to beam Chelsea in at people. Beam me in, Scotty, she says. I said, yes, ma'am.
She can't take any more, Captain.
Okay, perfect. Whoa,
a chat message.
Thank you, Mason, for helping me with that.
No problem, Governor.
I'm going to throw up. I'm not going to throw up. I'm going to...
All right, podcast is done. I'm going to go throw up.
I was going to say, I'm going to put up all of our new Amazon links.
What's going on?
Don't worry about it.
Morgan throws up after every podcast episode.
It's too much to handle. Too much awesomeness.
Stop quoting Jim Cummings, Mason.
Cool. I hope we're recording, because I can't wait to hear that.
Oh, we are recording. Get ready.
Oh, Chelsea, you sound so good and not sick.
Woo! Well, thank you. I haven't been sick for about a month, but thanks.
Well, the last episode.
Well, I just want to say, I just want to be the first to say on this podcast, we are glad you're not sick.
Thank you. It was a nasty thing.
I can feel the kung fu. Can you feel it? Oh, yeah. I can feel it.
All right. Kung fu!
Kung fu! I've been doing my voice stretches.
Oh, that video.
I'm just kidding. Oh, my little video. If it breaks 2,000, I'll be satisfied.
Oh, just give it time. It's gonna be like 100,000 before you know it. You need to do your own spin-off channel, which is just voice impressions.
Yeah, Mason Dubs. Mason, that's what it should be.
Mason Dubs! Mason Dubs!
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
No spoilers.
But anyway,
I've been spoiled. Ah,
we can say the name of one of the characters.
Well, yeah, but we just said he's the villain. Like, what if he's not revealed to be the villain until later?
What if he's the Lotso Huggins bear? Yeah.
Kung Fu Panda 2, the Kaboom of Doom.
Doom on you.
Doom on you.
Eric says, I'm your son. I really touch... Or, you should say that.
He's not Darth Vader.
Sorry, I thought... I forgot that was Poe's line.
I'm your son. The one true king.
Rewind.